What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Locked On Yankees podcast, your daily podcast covering the New York Yankees. We are brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. If you're a new listener to the show, hello and welcome. I hope you enjoy today's episode. If you're a veteran of this podcast, welcome back. I'm your host, Stacey Gottsoulias. You can follow me on Twitter at Locked On Yankees or at my personal account, StaceGotts. You can listen to and subscribe to Locked On Yankees on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, Player FM, and pretty much every podcast platform available. You can also listen to the show directly on our website, lockedonyankees.com. And finally, you can listen to Locked On Yankees on your smart speakers by saying play podcast Locked On Yankees. I have a smart speaker in my room. I do not dare say her name because she answers everything. As always, you can email questions or comments to LockedOnNYY@gmail.com. On today's episode of Locked On Yankees, we'll be discussing Sonny Gray and how he's still a Yankee on January 8th. The Yankees haven't made an offer to Manny Machado while the White Sox and Phillies are pursuing him. I might become apoplectic during that segment, so I'm apologizing in advance. And in today's last segment, we'll be celebrating Jason Giambi's 48th birthday with a few stories of games in which he was the hero. I attended a few of them. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Way back in October, after the Yankees were dispatched from the playoffs by the Red Sox, Brian Cashman made it perfectly clear that Sonny Gray would be traded. He would no longer be a Yankee. And as we all rejoiced, we should have realized that it wouldn't happen so soon. Because here we are in the new year, and Sonny Gray is still a Yankee. There have been reports of interested teams, namely the Reds, but nothing has ever been close to actually happening. So what's the deal? Brett Borzelli, I hope I'm saying that right, of Pinstripe Alley, wrote a piece yesterday that addresses this issue, and he brings up some good points. So he talks about Cashman talking about Gray not working out and how he would seek to trade him during the offseason. And then this past Friday, Cashman didn't completely take back the comments, but he backpedaled because CC Sabathia had his heart scare, which I didn't mention yesterday. That happened while I was on my hiatus. That was frightening news. So Cashman said, our intention is to move Sonny Gray and relocate him when we get the proper return in our estimation. It'll happen this winter, it'll happen in the spring, or it'll happen sometime during the season. The CC circumstance certainly has given us pause because we want to make sure that we're covered and protected. So during his press conference after the Yankees season ended, Cashman didn't bash Gray. He just said that he wasn't a bad makeup guy. He said that the team that acquires Gray will get the player that we wanted. And he said that at times he obviously showed what he was capable of and that Gray was also very well liked in the clubhouse. Now, the thing that drives me insane about that is why would the team you're trading him to be in a better position to unlock what Sonny Gray is truly capable of and what everyone saw in Oakland and what the Yankees thought they were getting in him? I don't understand. If anything, that means that maybe the Yankees need to change their pitching coach or maybe have Sonny Gray work with people who aren't the pitching coach, the manager, and the bullpen coach, because they're not doing their job. If they can't get Sonny Gray to perform at the level that they think he's supposed to perform at, how does this make sense to anyone? Does it make sense to you? Because it does not make sense to me. So now that CC has had this health scare, the Yankees don't seem to be in such a hurry to get rid of Gray, but I don't understand why they don't feel like they could be the ones to fix him. If he shows up to training camp and the same guys try to work with him that have been trying to work with him since he arrived, then nothing's going to change. So Borzelli brings up a good point. Maybe the Yankees should consult David Cohn or Mo or Pettit or Mike Messina. Maybe they can get Ron Guidry to help Gray out. Because as Borzelli says, and as we all know, people who are old enough to remember, most of those guys that I mentioned made in-career adjustments and changed how they were pitching. So why on earth would the Yankees not utilize those former players, current broadcasters? See, I thought I was just going to talk about how I wanted to get rid of Sonny Gray. But now that I've read this article and am agreeing with a lot of the stuff that's in this article, I'm so annoyed at how the Yankees are just like, well, okay, he didn't make any adjustments, so we're just going to ship him off. Maybe you need to have new people working with him. Did I just have an epiphany? Did I just change my mind and suddenly become someone who's supporting Sonny Gray and thinks that he should pitch for the Yankees in 2019? What is happening right now? Wow. Has this ever happened on a podcast before? Let me know if you agree with me on this. Maybe the Yankees don't need a new starter. Maybe they need to work with the one that they have, but they need new people to work with him. How about them apples? Okay, up next. Who knows what's going to happen when I start talking about Manny Machado? Maybe I'll start saying that I don't want the Yankees to sign him. I'm kidding, that will never happen. So that'll be up next. But first, in yesterday's episode, I went off on the Yankees a little bit about their tepid pursuit of Manny Machado. I have no idea why it's tepid, other than the fact that Hal is a cheapskate and doesn't want to spend any money to make the Yankees any better, which is ridiculous and the total opposite of his father, which I don't want to. I really hate when people say, well, if George was alive, this wouldn't happen. But right now, at this point, that's actually true. If George were alive, Manny Machado would have been a Yankee a month ago. If George were alive, Bryce Harper would be a Yankee. If George were alive, Dallas Keuchel might have been a Yankee. Craig Kimbrel could have been a Yankee. Remember 10 years ago during that crazy offseason when the Yankees got Swisher, and they got AJ, and they got CeCe, and they got Tex? And then after the Yankees won the World Series in November of 2009, Hal said, Dad, this one's for you. Because Hal acted like his father during that offseason. Since then, that hasn't really happened. Although I would say signing Jacoby Ellsbury to a 7-year, $153 million deal after he had one good season is something that old George would definitely do. But this whole acting like you're pinching your pennies because you don't have enough money to get someone like Manny Machado is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. And it's embarrassing. Everyone knows you have the money. Everyone knows how much money or revenue the Yankees bring in every year. We know that you're trying to buy back the controlling shares of the YES Network, which isn't cheap. And you'll have the money to do that and sign Manny Machado. And this whole, oh, they're scared of a 10-year contract. He's 26. You should be scared of 10-year contracts when you give them to 32-year-olds, not 26-year-olds, not someone who's about to enter their prime, someone who is already good and who could possibly get better. I don't understand this. I said it yesterday. I don't get it. They shouldn't be hemming and hawing about this. This should have been done. When they met with him and took him around the stadium and then took him out to dinner, they should have been like, what do you want? We will give it to you. This shouldn't be a question. There shouldn't be a hesitation. This should be done. Troy Tulowitzki was being interviewed because everything is official. and he was talking about how awesome it would be if Manny Machado were a Yankee. Of course it would be awesome. You'd have Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Manny Machado, Gary Sanchez, all in the same lineup. And I know everyone's talking about, oh, it's a righty-heavy lineup. They need some lefties. So get Bryce Harper. Problem solved. I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, I'm not. If I had the Yankees' money, Bryce Harper would be a Yankee, along with Manny Machado. The White Sox signed John Jay. Apparently John Jay works out with Manny Machado's brother-in-law, whose name escapes me at the moment. So everyone is thinking, oh, so that means that Manny Machado will go to the White Sox. I don't think that's the case. I mean, you can work out with these people in the offseason. You don't have to play with them. Then there was a report yesterday that Manny Machado's wife would love to live in New York City. And if I recall correctly, I think Teixeira's wife had a big part in him deciding to go to the Yankees instead of Boston. And it had to do with being in New York City. So, you know, don't discount that report about his wife. Because, you know, happy wife, happy life. These guys know what's up. But like I said yesterday, if this was all for show and they actually had no intention of offering anything substantial to Machado, I'm going to be so angry. And I would say the majority of Yankee fans should be angry as well. What was the point of that dog and pony show if not to make an offer to one of the best free agents, well, the best free agent on the market? We should all be insulted that the Yankees wasted our precious time this past month, where in our brain matter we could have been thinking about something else other than, are the Yankees going to sign Manny Machado? Instead of getting our hopes up because they took him out to a three-hour-long dinner, during which they should have said, come to New York, we'll give you anything you want. But no. The Yankees are acting like they have a $10 million payroll. The Yankees are acting like the Mets, a team that has money to spend but won't do it. It's embarrassing. Up next, my mood will change from angry to happy as I discuss my favorite player from the mid-2000s, Jason Giambi, who's celebrating his 48th birthday today. That's next, but first, I love Jason Giambi. And if Twitter were around during the time that the Balco scandal happened and all of that weird stuff happened, you would have seen a scary version of me. Or shall I say scarier version of me? You don't know how many email fights I got into with baseball columnists all over the country who wrote stupid things about Jason Giambi. And then, after getting into fights with them, we then came to agreements and then became friends, which is kind of funny. But in the world of Twitter, it would have been much different. So let's discuss Giambi as a Yankee, because a lot of people downplay his time as a Yankee, but he was pretty successful. I mean, sure, he had that one year where he had a parasite and all these weird ailments happening, and his absence in that championship series that I don't like to mention was glaring. And I think if he were there, things would have been completely different. I digress. Let's discuss 2005, because that's the infamous season after all of the Balco crap came out. In May of that year, people were talking about the Yankees sending him down to the minor leagues to work out his stuff. He refused to do it. He decided to stick it out. On June 15th, against the Pirates, he hit a walk-off home run. I think it was June 15th. I'm going by my memory. If I'm wrong, correct me. hit a walk-off home run in the 10th inning into the upper deck. Bobby Mercer had one of the worst home run calls ever, but I love Mercer. May he rest in peace. In July of 05 was when Giambi's bat came alive. I just rhymed like a poet. Thank you very much. I went to a game in early July. It was against the Indians. It was so hot that day. And thankfully, my friend had tickets in the loge of the old stadium, so we'd be in shade the entire time. I had my regular Sunday tickets, and it just so happened that a couple had been scammed by a scalper and given fake tickets. The wife was crying. The husband was comforting her. I went up to them. I said, look, these are two seats in the upper deck. You'll be roasting, but I'm giving them to you for free. They're part of my season tickets. I'm going to be sitting with my friend in her seats. Here you go. And they said, no, 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 we're going to give you money. I said, fine, I'll come up and see you in the seats. Just give it to me during the game. So I ended up doing that. And oh my God, I was so glad I didn't sit in my seats because I would have roasted. So we were sitting in the loge just ahead of the right field foul pole. And Jason Giambi hit a home run off Jake Westbrook that went three quarters up into the right field bleachers and looked like it was still going up when it landed. And I looked at my friend and I said, oh my God, oh my God. It was insane. And I believe, actually, I think that game was July 10th, something like that. And he had hit home runs on the 3rd and July 4th against Baltimore. I think he had three home runs in two games. It was something crazy like that. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, someone's waking up. Then I went to see him play against the Angels on July 31st. It was cap day. The Angels were winning 6-2 at one point. Giambi hit two home runs. The Yankees came back. And Tony Womack hit a pinch hit. Was it a pinch hit or was he already in the game? I guess technically it was kind of like a pinch hit because it was his first at bat after he was inserted into the game. But he hit a walk-off single through a five-man infield. Thank you, Mike Socha. And the Yankees won. In August of 2005, I went to see the Yankees play on my actual birthday, August 26th, which was a Friday that year. I took my best friend who loved Bernie Williams, and Bernie Williams hit two home runs that night. Giambi didn't do anything special. 2 days later, on Sunday, August 28th, I went with my two friends, Kyle and Jen, sat in my normal Sunday seats. Zach Greinke started the game. Jason Giambi finished the game with seven RBIs. He had two home runs. He had an RBI single. The Yankees won the game 10-3 against the Royals. And as we were going up the escalator, the far escalator in right field, because fewer people went through that entrance. For some reason, everyone wanted to go in by the bat because that's where everyone met behind home plate. So we were going up the escalator and my friend Jen said, I am feeling Giambo. I am feeling Giambi mojo today. And I said, from your lips to God's ears. And after he hit his second home run, she was like, I told you. I loved that year for Giambi, especially because in the very beginning of the year, I said he was definitely going to hit 30 home runs and he'd be fine. And then when he started off really slow and he wasn't doing anything, people were teasing me. And he ended up hitting 32 home runs, which was pretty cool. Oh, also in 2005, Sunday night game against the Mets at the stadium. I have to say, with my old ticket package that I had, because I had the Sunday plan, I always got to see premium matchups. So I was always stuck at Yankee Red Sox ESPN games and Yankee Mets ESPN games, which when I was working in the city, it was better on some nights when the subway was actually working. On other nights when the subway was not working, it wasn't so great. But anyway, I digress. It was a Sunday night game against the Mets. Giambi hit a walk-off. I think it ended up being a single because he only went to first. It could have been a double. But he hit a walk-off, and it was great. And I remember that night clearly because it was pretty hot out. I was wearing a tank top and khakis. I met my father, my brother, and my best friend by the subway stairs because they were coming from Woodlawn up in the northern Bronx because we never parked around Yankee Stadium. When we went to Yankee Stadium, we'd park around Woodlawn locally on the streets and then take the subway down because it was so much cheaper than parking at the stadium. And we still do that when we go to Yankee games. I was living in Manhattan at the time, so I took the D train to Yankee Stadium. So I met them where all the stairs converged. The four stairs coming from the sky and the D train stairs coming from the basement. And my best friend was also wearing a tank top. And we're both girls who are lucky in that department up top of our bodies. And my father was not thrilled with how we looked. Now, I will say that I did not have any cleavage showing. It was just the tank top that bothered him. But he yelled at the two of us. Did I mention that I was 30 years old at the time and living on my own in the city for a while? And my father still scolded me like I was a 14-year-old dressing scantily. So anyway, that night always sticks out to me because of that story and because of Giambi's walk-off. So I loved Jason Giambi. I was sad when he left. I understood why he had to leave. And I was sad because he actually went on the DL just before he was supposed to play a game that I had tickets to at the new Yankee Stadium when he was with Oakland that year in 09. So I was pissed and I didn't get to see him. I don't think I got to see him play in person after he left the Yankees. I'm trying to think. I think when he was with the Rockies and he came to Yankee Stadium, they were midweek games, and I didn't get to see him. So I am almost positive that either I hadn't gotten to see him at all, or I only got to see him play once when he left the Yankees. I'm pretty sure it was zero, which makes me so sad. But anyway, Giambi was interviewed, I believe, last year, and he said that while he does want to continue his career in baseball, he's going to take a few years off and be a dad because he has young kids. I think they're only like 5 and 3. But I think that Giambi would be a great addition to a coaching staff. And I mean, personally, I would love if the Yankees could hire him. I know he's a California boy, but I think he would be a great addition to the Yankees coaching staff. So if anyone from the Yankees is listening to this, think about that. So that's it for today's episode of Locked On Yankees. I apologize for my mood in the first two segments, but the Yankees are making me angry. And they should be making you just as angry. So you've been listening to Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I have been your host, Stacey Gotsoulias. You can follow me at Locked On Yankees on Twitter or at my personal account, Stace Gotts. Once again, you can email questions to lockedonnyy@gmail.com. You can tweet them at me. That's fine, too. And if you could, you could rate this podcast on Apple and on Google. That would be great. You can subscribe at Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, and spread the word about the podcast to your fellow Yankee fans who may not know about the podcast yet. Spread the word to your fellow baseball fans, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.